Side 8, The Legend of Luke, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 313. In his excitement, he had forgotten all else. Next instant, Peregg and Akla came rushing from the crew's quarters.
What's happening? Who's taking the ship? Some piece trying to free the slaves! Call to arms! All paws on deck!
Slaves began pouring from the companionways of the three oar decks, some armed with what they could find, lengths of chain, pieces of timber, and pitifully few daggers. Unsure how to proceed, they milled about on the deck, some weeping openly, not knowing what to do with their newfound freedom. These slaves, all from the upper and middle decks, soon found themselves set upon by masses of heavily armed sea rogues, veterans in the business of bloodshed. Verg and Bo rushed to their aid. Laying two sea rats low with savage kicks from his long hind legs, the hare grabbed the vermin's cutlasses and tossed one to Verg, bellowing,
"Rally to us, you chaps! Don't sit round blubbering! Fight!"
Several of the younger and bolder spirits obeyed, but there were others, too weak and frightened, who were thoroughly intimidated by the fierce horde of the Gorleach's crew. These wretched creatures ran and hid, and a lot of them tried to push their way back down to the oar decks, to the benches and chains where they had lived for long seasons. Then, Ranguvar Foeseeker arrived upon the scene. Battering slaves aside like ninepins, Bullflay came screaming out of the companionway, terror stamped upon his ugly features. Behind him, like the shadow of death, was Ranguvar. Laying into the slave master with his own whip, the black squirrel was a sight to strike fear into the heart of any beast, now that she was on the loose. The long whip cracked around Bullflay's ears as Ranguvar Foeseeker went after him, the stormy night echoing to her battle cries.
Ya-ya-la-ho! I am the Foeseeker, born in Moondark to the crash of thunder. Sing your death songs! Ya-ya-la-ho!
In his panic, Bullflay fled straight up the rigging, with Ranguvar hard on his heels, her eyes red with blood wrath, laughing madly as she closed on her hated foe. Vilu Daskar felt himself gripped by the icy claws of panic. Never in his wildest imaginings had he dreamed this could happen aboard his red ship.
Akla! Peregg! Bring the crew astern! Gather to me!
As the sea rogues crowded around, Luke called to his enemy above the din of storm and battle,
"What are you going to do now, coward? Your slaves are free and fightin'. The Gorleach is being driven to the rocks. 'Twas a bad day for you when you murdered my wife."
As if to emphasize the dilemma, Bullflay's body, choked by his own whiplash, came flying down from aloft and crashed through the afterdeck stairs, taking with it two vermin who were making their way aft. Ranguvar Foeseeker climbed halfway down the rigging, then with a blood-curdling yell, hurled herself on a group of sea rogues who were hacking at helpless slaves on the main deck. The pirate stoat turned on Luke, his voice a venomous hiss as he slashed at the bound warrior with his sword.
"You were the cause of all this, but I will end it here."
Luke could not protect himself from the wild, vicious onslaught, even though the swinging blade chopped the ropes free from one of his paws. Doolum and Denno were battling their way to the afterdeck when they saw Luke being attacked. Bo and Verg saw it too and fought their way to the shattered stairs. Verg crying out,
"Luke! No! Hang on, mate! We're coming!"
But Luke was not finished. Fighting his way up through waves of pain, he put all his strength into a single blow. His paw chopped down on that of Vilu Daskar, sending the bone-handled scimitar skimming off into the sea. Then Luke had Daskar in a death grip, crushing him tight against the ship's wheel. Sea rogues hurled themselves upon the warrior, trying to free their captain, who was screeching with fright. Pounding willy-nilly at the warrior, they were about to break the awful grip he had on Vilu Daskar, when suddenly Ranguvar Foeseeker was in their midst, armed with two swords. The black squirrel was like a berserk tornado, dealing out death and fearsome wounds, laughing madly into the stricken faces of her foes.
Ya-ya-la-ho! Tis a fine night to die! Ya-ya-la-ho! Take a deep breath, buckos, it'll be your last! I'll hold 'em off, Luke, you hold Daskar tight! Ya-ya-la-ho!
Looming up to the red ship was a towering rock, 10 times the girth of any craft, with waves riding high up its sides and smashing in foamy cascades. Luke had Daskar's paws twined through the wheel spokes like a captive upon a rack, and the pirate stoat, his back pressed hard against the wheel, began begging and pleading hoarsely for his life as the Gorleach rode side on toward the monstrous column of wave-lashed stone.
"Spare me, Luke! You can have the treasure and freedom for all the slaves. Take the red ship, too! But let me go. I speak truly. My word is my bond. Spare my life!"
Luke the warrior pressed his face close to that of his mortal enemy, crushing him tighter and whispering, "Cowards die 1,000 times. A warrior dies only once. The spirits of all you have slain are watching you, Vilu Daskar, and they will rest in peace now that your time has come. You must die as you have lived, a coward to the last." When the red ship struck the rock, it reverberated from stem to stern. There was a noise like an overhead peal of thunder. Then it was shorn in 2 halves upon the mighty pinnacle of stone. The Gorleach hung there for 1 awful moment. Then the whole stern, from after deck to midships, fell. With a huge creaking of sundered timbers, it hit the water and sank instantly, far, far below the seas, never to be seen again. Book 3. A Warrior's Legacy. 35. Sunlight lanced through into the cabin of the Arf ship. Dust motes swirled lazily about the still-lit lanterns. Denno took the rock crystal glasses from his nose end and placed them on the closed book in front of him. Yawning and rubbing his eyes gently, he leaned back and stared up at the noon sky.
"So now you know everything, Martin of Redwall. That's the whole story, as best as we could remember."
All eyes were on the stone-faced warrior, awaiting his reaction. After what seemed an interminable silence, he spoke. "Am I to understand, then, that my father wrecked the Gorleach on the big column, knowing that he would die?" Beau wiped a paw across his eyes and sniffed.
"Aye, that's what he did, old lad. Wounded almost to death, with Ranguvar Foeseeker holding off almost an entire vermin crew so Luke and her could have their revenge on Vilu Daskar, the Red Ship, and all that had caused them to lose their loved ones. By the fur, blood, tooth, and sword, 2 braver warriors never lived."
Verg grasped the warrior mouse's paw tightly.
"They did it for you, for all of us, Martin. Every beast who'd ever suffered by the wickedness of Daskar and his Red Ship. Luke was past caring about what happened to himself. Ranguvar, too. Between them, their final sacrifice was to rid the land and seas of a great evil."
Martin's eyes were like chips of ice. "I would have done exactly the same in my father's place." Dulum felt the hairs rise on his nape as he watched Martin.
"I believe you would have, too. That sounded just like your dad talking then. We all would. But for the fact we were at the forward end when the ship broke in two."
Martin stared keenly from one to the other. "Is there anything else I should know? Verg, you knew him better than most. Tell me." The old mouse shook his head wistfully.
"He gave you all he could. Vengeance for your mother and our tribe. Freedom from a terror that the coastlands and seas lived in fear of. But I remember that day we sailed off from the Northlands, he gave you his sword. That blade had never left his paw, or that of his father and his father before him. It was the most precious thing Luke ever owned."
But there was something else, Martin, not from your father alone. When you discovered me in the old cave back there, I had found something buried in the sand. Here.
Berg passed the beaded linen bag to Martin. It was the sort of container a mother would use to keep her baby's things in, together with the small possessions she held dear. Martin's paw traced the beautiful pattern of tiny threaded beads worked onto the linen. He eased himself slowly away from the table and left the cabin. Gonf called after him.
You all right, matey? Need any help or company?
There was no answer from the warrior. Gonf settled back against a bulkhead.
Best leave him alone a while. Get some shut-eye, mates. I've a feeling that when he comes back through yon door, we'll be leaving this place. You and your pals better pack, Berg. We ain't leaving you stranded up in these rocks on a broken ship. You'll have to keep pinching yourselves to make sure you're not dreaming when you see Redwall Abbey, mates.
Martin climbed down the front of the huge main column and sat on a ledge with a sea almost lapping his footpaws, gazing down into the fathomless deeps. Somewhere, far below, lay the stern of the Gorleach, with his father, Luke the Warrior, pinning Vilu Daskar against the steering wheel, holding his enemy in an eternal embrace. Around them would be strewn the pirate stoat's vermin guard and Luke's berserk friend, Ranguvar Foeseeker. Pride surged through Martin. His father and the Black Squirrel had kept their vows. They were the bravest of the brave, true warriors. Martin sat there a long time, staring at the spot where sunlight ended in sea-green haze. From that beaded bag he took a stone, a rounded, medium-sized pebble, banded with various colors. The sort his father might have picked up from the beach long ago and brought back to the cave for his wife or little son. Martin held it a while, until the stone took on warmth from his paws. Then he dropped it gently into the sea, watching it sink rapidly from sight into the depths. This is for you, my father, from Sena, the wife you lost, and Martin, the son you strove to return to. But I have made good your promise. I returned to find you. Ranguvar Foeseeker, I know not if you had any family, but you have two friends forever, Luke the Warrior and Martin of Redwall. I will carry your memories in my heart. Martin left the tall rock then, with the seas still booming in his ears as they broke against it. In all his life he never went back to that place. On the next ebb tide, the skiff Honeysuckle sailed away from Tall Rocks, bound south for Redwall. Skipper of Otters craned his head back, staring up into the pale blue summer morn. Bella, the badger mother of Redwall, waited patiently, already knowing what her burly friend's question would be.
Of course. I can tell the squirrels to set up more scaffolding at the south end, Marm, but why, pray?
Bella spread her paws wide as if the answer were obvious.
Because summer is nearly done, and autumn will soon be here.
Sitting back on his powerful tail, the big otter shrugged.
Afraid you've lost me, Marm. What difference will that make? Autumn always follered summer. 'Tis the way of the seasons. What's that got to do with scaffolding?
Bella sat beside him, fiddling with the strings of her apron.
Mayhap 'tis just a foolish fancy of mine, Skip, but I'd like to see the south gable built right up as far as it will reach. According to Abbess Germain and Martin's plans, that's where the weather vane will be, at the highest point.
Columbine approached them and sat down, unfolding a clean white linen cloth to reveal a scone still warm from the window ledge where it had lain to cool.
Taste that and tell me what you think.
Breaking it in two, she gave them a piece each. Bella inspected the pastry, sniffing it appreciatively.
Smells wonderful. I can see chopped nuts and bits of crystallized honey in there. But tell me, why is the scone pink?
Because it's a Redwall Abbey scone, the pretty mousewife explained. I used wild cherry juice in the mix to give it the color of our walls. I plan on making them in the shape of the sandstone blocks we've used to build our abbey with. Do you like them, Skip?" The otter had bolted his piece in one great mouthful, and now he picked crumbs from his whiskers and nibbled them.
"Very tasty, Columbine, Marm. Exceedin' nice. But you're going to need a big oven to bake 'em big as sandstone blocks."
Columbine gave Skipper a playful shove. "Oh, you great puddin'-headed river dog. They'll only be little scones baked in the shape of the big stones." The otter chieftain scratched his head.
"Aye, Marm. Seems I can't get a thing right today. Do you know why autumn follows summer, and that's why the squirrels must build more scaffolding, so that we can build the south gable end up to its peak with a weather vane atop? 'Cause I'm blowed if and I do, old Puddin'-Head that I am."
Columbine hugged Bella's huge paw. "Oh, what a lovely, wonderful idea. Our south gable built high, with a weather vane sticking up on it. When my gonf comes marching down the path with Martin and Denny and Trimp, why, they'll be able to see it from a great distance. How nice!" A slow smile spread across Skipper's face as the reason for Bella's request dawned upon him.
"Ha-har! So that's it! Swoggle me, Rudder! Why didn't I think of that?"
He fell backward as Bella and Columbine tugged his footpaws, chuckling aloud as they chorused together, "'Cause you're a great puddin'-headed old river dog!" Bella made the announcement right after breakfast. It was wholeheartedly supported by all the creatures of Redwall. Lady Amber added to the excitement. "An excellent idea. I'll get my squirrels to work straight away on the scaffolding, though 'twill take most of the day erecting it up on the south end, so here's what I suggest. Friends, you've worked hard and long all summer. Why not have a day's rest? Perhaps a picnic by the pond can be arranged for early evening. We'll have finished the scaffolding by then, so we'll be able to join you. First thing tomorrow, every beast can pitch in, and we'll really go to work and top off that south gable. How's that?"
Rousing cheers greeted the Squirrel Queen's scheme. Ferdy and Cogs, the hedgehog's cellar keepers, trundled barrels, kegs, and casks out of the main abbey door onto the lawn. Baby Gauntlet was waiting with his gang of dibbins, all armed with wedge stones and prodding sticks. Cogs narrowed his eyes.
"What are you up to, Gauntlet, you little wretch?"
Gauntlet waved his barrel-prodding stick dismissively.
"You and Ferd go now, Cog. Us take these barrels down to a pond. Not worry, us good barrel rollers."
Cogs exchanged glances with his twin brother.
"What do you reckon, Ferdy? Shall we let 'em?"
Ferdy smiled at the dibbins, who were dancing about and waving their sticks eagerly.
"Aye, they got to learn sometime, I suppose. But roll that big barrel of strawberry fizz slow now, Gauntlet, and go easy with those firkins of elderberry wine. And the rest of you, stay behind the barrels all the way. Don't go running in front. We don't want your mamas after our blood 'cause you've been run down by some keg or cask."
Bella walked by, followed by a group of Redwallers carrying canvas and poles.
"We'll make a good lean-to," the Badger Mother was saying. "It'll provide shade for the food, and the elders can rest there. Mayberry, will you and Catkin get a trolley, line it with blankets, and fetch Abbess Germaine down to the pond? Go easy with her, please. Remember, she's very old and frail."
Mayberry and Catkin, the two otter maids, bobbed curtsies to Bella and trotted off, feeling very important. Columbine supervised the kitchens, bringing order and calm to the bustle of cooks and helpers. "Clear those window ledges of scones now. We need room for the turnip and parsley flans to cool. Miss Woodspike, would you like to top those blackberry tarts off with meadow cream? I don't know any beast who does it as neat as you do. Mr. Pitclaw, could you help me to get the oat loaves out of the ovens, please? Oh, and tell your moles we need more charcoal to heat that back oven for cheese and mushroom flans. No, don't worry about your deeper and ever pie. I'll watch it while you're gone. Now, let me see. Strawberry shortcake, rhubarb crumble, leek and onion turnovers, deep apple pie, Is that everything? Oh, dearie me, I've forgotten the salad.
A fat, bewhiskered bank bull broke in on Columbine's musings.
Never fret, missus. I've been chopping salad and mixing it since hard after breakfast. 'Tis just about made. Kirby, did we remember to pick some fennel?
A jolly-looking mole dug both claws into his apron pocket, rocking back and forth as he announced,
You may have forgetted fennel, sir, but I bain't. I gertly likes my salad well fennelled, brr I.
Beamingly, he pointed to a sizable pile of fennel. Lady Amber stood high up on the south gable, heading the line of squirrels passing up thick yew scaffolding poles to others, with knives held in their teeth and lengths of stout cord draped over their shoulders. They chatted away nonchalantly, clinging by tails and paws from their perilous positions. Below them, the lawns of Redwall Abbey looked like a series of green kerchiefs.
"Chuck me that big 'un with the forked top, Barco. Aye, that's the one. Ash Twig, grab this end while I tie it off to the main platform. Pass more cords up, will ye?"
Swift and sure they toiled away, with a clear blue sky above and a breathtaking void beneath them.
"Looks nice and cool down by that pond. They're putting a lean-to up, see?" "Aye, and look it, there's Miss Columbine and the others, carrying trays of victuals from the Abbey. What's that noise?" "My tummy, mate. I can almost smell cheese and mushroom flans from up here. Hope they don't start afore we get down. If you don't cut the gab and tie off that pole, we'll be up here come this time tomorrow. Shape yourself, matey."
Mayberry and Catkin delivered Abbess Germaine to Bella, who was waiting beneath the canvas awning. Both the young otter maids bobbed another curtsy together.
"Here she is, safe and sound, Miss Bell. Snug as a bug in a rug, with all those cushions and blankets, Miss Bell. We was very, very careful with her, marm."
Twinkle-eyed, the ancient abbess peered out of the trolley.
If they'd pushed me any slower, we would have stopped. Two snails passed us on the way, would you believe?"
Both otter maids' lower lips began to tremble. Abbess Germaine chuckled, nodding fondly at them.
Now don't fret, little maids. I was jesting. An old fogey like me couldn't ask for more gentle or better care than you two showed to me. Cheer up, now."
Bella ruffled the ears of both affectionately. "That's why I sent them. Mayberry and Catkin are my two best and most trusted helpers. Run along now, you two." Smiling and curtsying, they prepared to skip off.
"Thank ye, Miss Bell. Nice to be of service to ye. And you too, Mother Abbess. Just call if and you needs us."
Germaine was a bit warm. She shrugged off the blankets as she watched the two otter maids looking for others to assist.
"Such good little things, Bella. A credit to Redwall, eh?"
"I'll say they are. They're both Skipper's granddaughters, you know. I was only saying to him the other day,
'Yah, look out! Every beast out of the way!'"
Amid squeaks of dismay and a great bumping and rumbling, Bella seized both abbess and trolley. Heaving them up in her strong paws, she dashed from the lean-to, not a moment too soon. Gonflet and his dibbins had let Cogs and Ferdy's cellar stock get away from them. Down the slope, a thundering stampede of kegs, barrels, firkins, and casks leaped, bounced, and spun. In their wake came Gonflet and his gang of little abbey creatures, hallooing and whooping wildly. Bella ducked, covering the abbess with her body as a keg of penny-cloud cordial bounced and whizzed by overhead, missing the badger's ears by a whisker. In a trice, the lean-to was leveled, flattened to the ground. In a resounding boom of splashes, the picnic drinks in their oaken containers hit the pond's surface, drenching every beast within range in a cascade of pond water. Dripping from ears to tail, Bella turned to the saturated gang of dibbins. Gonflet grinned from ear to ear, pointing with his stick at the array of floating barrels bobbing about in the pond.
"All go too fast to stop, Miss Bell. But pond keep the drinks nice and cool, I think.
Bella could not be angry in the face of the little fellow's irresistible charm, though she hid a smile and tried to sound stern. "I knew a young mouse one time who was just like you, a scamp, a rascal, and a complete pickle." Gauntlet pawed water from his eye, wrinkling his nose as he stared up at the big badger mother.
"What was him name, Miss Bell?"
The huge, striped muzzle lowered until it was level with Gauntlet's face. "If I recall rightly, his name was Gaunt." This sent the tiny mouse off into tucks of laughter. Waving his stick, he raced off with his dibbin gang, shouting,
"Hee-hee-hee! Just wait till I tell my daddy! You a scamp, rascal, pickler! That what Miss Bell called you! Hee-hee-hee!"
Creakily, Abbess Germaine emerged from the swath of blankets and cushions in her trolley. She began sorting out poles from the pile of collapsed canvas.
"Mm-mm. 'Tis some long season since I built a lean-to. Lend a paw here, Bella. Come on."
The badger mother sighed as she dragged the canvas aside.
"Gauntlet was right, though. The pond will keep those barrels nice and cool on a day like this, Mother Abbess."
That evening the picnic was a huge success. Lady Amber and her squirrels skipped nimbly down the scaffolding, navigating the sheer walls as if they were on level ground, singing as they descended. "The dull old ground is not for me. I can't stand it somehow. Leave me in a good stout tree upon a knotty bough. 'Tis hey-ho, and up we go. Above the ground we dwell, where every leaf and twig we know, and every branch right well. A squirrel so nimble, can climb most anywhere. A tail in a tree is a symbol that I'm at home up there. So ash, oak, rowan, or pine, stately elm, or beech, they're all fine, they're all mine, they're all within my reach." While the Redwallers made merry, otters fished the barrels of drink from the pond. Gauntlet and his dibbin gang had every beast roaring with laughter as they performed a dramatic reenactment of the barrel incident. Skipper held his sides to stop the making, tears of helpless merriment streaming from his eyes as a small mole, acting a barrel of dandelion and burdock cordial, tumbled downhill into the pond. Columbine hauled him out and attempted to give the tiny creature a strict lecture, but was unable to do so because she collapsed laughing. Lanterns were lit at the pond's edge when evening shadows deepened, the still water reflecting their glow. Mayberry and Catkin performed a graceful dance to the accompaniment of Ferdy and Cogs on drum and fiddle, playing a time-honored favorite called Bide in the Rushes. Columbine left off serving drinks and sat eating pensively. Abbess Germaine watched her closely.
"An acorn for your thoughts, my dear."
Columbine recovered herself as Gauntlet hurled himself into her lap.
"What? Oh, sorry, Mother Abbess. I was in a bit of a daze. I was just thinking how much I miss Gonf. Martin and Denny, too, of course. I wish Autumn would hurry and they'd return to Redwall."
Gauntlet yawned and looked up at his mother.
"I want my daddy. When it be Autumn, Mama?"
The dancing had stopped and all eyes turned on Columbine. Gauntlet's lids began drooping as she stroked his head and softly recited an old poem. "Round the season slowly turning, faithful as the stars and moon, summer fades, the earth is yearning, softly whispering, autumn soon. Drape the woods in mist one morning, now small birds have learned to fly. Mother Nature's gentle warning, see green leaves turn brown and die. In old orchards on the bough, fruit hangs russet, red, and gold. Purple scarlet berries now, all the rambling hedgerows hold. Hazel, beech, and chestnut too, each displays its burden fair. They will shed them, all for you, ere winter lays their branches bare. Fields of ripened grain and corn, swaying to a murmuring breeze, shaking off the dew of dawn, when the eye sees signs like these. Summer's long hot days are ended, harvest moons o'er stream and mere, tell the tale as 'twas intended. Autumn's peaceful dream is here. Columbine shifted slightly, trying not to disturb her sleeping babe.
Ooh, this fellow's getting heavy these days.
Bella relieved her friend of the burden, scooping Gauntlet neatly up in one huge paw. She nodded knowingly.
Little wonder. See, the pockets of his smock are full of wedge stones to use on the barrels. Pity the scamp never bothered to use them.
Abbess Germaine could not help remarking,
Think of the fun we'd have missed if he did. That one'll grow up a bigger rascal than his father. But you're right, Columbine. Redwall isn't the same without Martin, Denny, and your Gonf. Let's hope they'll make it back safely.
Skipper paused, a cheese and mushroom plan halfway to his mouth.
Only beasts I'd be worried about, begging your pardon, Marm, are those foolish enough to try and stop 'em returning to our abbey. Huh, I'd sure enough feel sorry for those.
Columbine topped the otter's beaker up with October ale.
I suppose you're right, Skip, but my Gonf attracts trouble, no matter where he is. I think he enjoys it.
Abbess Germaine patted the mousewife's paw.
That's why he has two good friends, Martin, who has never been defeated by any beast, and Dinny, full of caution and sensible mole logic. Don't fret yourself over those three, my dear. They could overcome anything.
Bella winked at Skipper to lighten the evening's end and take Columbine's mind off worries about Gonf and his friends.
Getting late, Skip. Come on, you haven't sung tonight. Send us all off to our beds with one of your funny ditties.
The burly otter was only too willing to oblige.
Good night, sleep tight. Don't forget to close the door. Good night, sleep tight. Use the bed and not the floor. Good night, sleep tight. Now don't let me hear you snore. Good night, sleep tight. And don't sleepwalk any more. Blow out the candle, turn down the bed, stop your yawning, sleepy head. Good night, sleep tight, up the wooden stairs you creep. Good night, sleep tight, put on your nightie, go to sleep. Good night, sleep tight, stop that talking in your dreams. Good night, sleep tight, don't rip your sheets to smithereens. If a nightmare starts to show, and you wake me up, oh-ho, out the window you will go. Good night.
Leaving the pondside, they trooped slowly back to the abbey, Bella in the lead carrying the sleeping Gauntlet, Columbine linking paws with the otter maids, Ferdy and Cogs pulling the trolley in which the abbess slumbered, followed by all the other beasts. Skipper brought up the rear of the procession, singing as quietly as his big gruff voice would allow. Every beast joined in, keeping their voices low, the catchy melody acting as a gentle march, echoing softly over moonlit abbey lawns. As they entered the main abbey door, a vagrant breeze ruffled Bella's fur. She shuddered lightly and whispered to Columbine, "Bit of a chill in the air just then." Gauntlet, who was supposed to be fast asleep, opened one eye and grinned cheekily.
Soon be's autumn now, Miss Bell.
36. The honeysuckle skimmed southward like a playful swallow, Logalog Firmo proudly showing off her prowess as a skiff to the four creatures from the ARF ship. Martin sat in the prow, enjoying the sun, sea spray, and breeze, with his faithful friend Gonf alongside him. Together they listened to Trimp attempting to chide Chugger for his lack of respect to the elders. "I'll not tell you again, Chug. Please stop calling our friends old grandpas. 'Tis not very good manners."
"Cha! You don't know nothing. They good old grandpas for Chug. We making Laura Skilly Duffs for 'em."
Fulgrim and Denny had been appointed assistant cooks, helping Chugger to cook Skilly and Duff. They were on his side.
"Maister Chug bain't doin' no harm, missy. Bain't that so, Sir Foal?"
"Aye, let the little tyke be, miss. He ain't never had a grandpa. Har, now he's got four of 'em."
Tremp appealed to Berg and his friends.
Please forgive Chugger. I hope he hasn't offended you.
There, there, don't fret, young gal. What? They can call us blather-faced bloaters as long as he keeps feeding us. Jolly little rip, ain't he, Berg?
Aye, and seeing as we've got no families of our own, 'tis nice to be chosen as grandsires by him. Ahoy there, Cap'n Chug. Is our Skilly and Duff ready yet?
The small squirrel gave his concoction a final stir and licked the ladle. Nodding brusquely, he issued orders.
Skilly Duff cookered now. Mr. Fole, Mr. Din, give old Grandpa some first. Miss Trimp, you serve the rest of my crew.
Martin and Gonf had difficulty keeping straight faces as they accepted their bowls from Trimp. The hedgehog maid was quietly seething.
Bush-tailed little villain, who does he think he is? Issuing orders to me as if I were some sort of lackey.
Martin blew upon his spoon as he tasted the food.
He does make great Skilly and Duff, though.
What do you think, Gonf?
Never tasted better, matey. Do you reckon Chug could adopt us as old grandpas?
No, we're a bit young for that. Why don't we apply to be uncles, like Fulgrim and Denny?
Trimp stamped off to serve the goo-awesome shrews, muttering,
I don't know. Every beast aboard this boat has got that cheeky-faced villain spoiled rotten.
Chugger's latest order interrupted her rebellious musing.
Find more bowls for the shoes, Miss Trimp.
Trimp turned on Chugger, paws akimbo, shouting shrilly,
Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. Perhaps you'd like me to scrub the decks and polish the oars.
Chugger's reply left her speechless.
No, no, do that later. Just stop shouting for now. My old grandpas are going to take naps. Hush your noise now.
It was some days later, and the weather was getting noticeably warmer. Fermo steered the honeysuckle closer inshore, hallooing the creatures standing paw-deep in the shallows.
Dune Spike, old mate, how are you?
Splashing about joyfully, the fat old dune hog chieftain hailed the boat.
Sure, and I'm all the better for your asking, Fermo. Come ashore now and rest your old fur.
Willing paws helped haul the honeysuckle above the tide line. Murpho and a gang of young male hedgehogs fell over each other, assisting Trimp ashore.
Faith and fortunes, missy, but you're looking grand, grand, prettier than ever, though I says so myself.
Trimp grabbed an oar and vaulted over them onto the sand.
Aye, and still well able to take care of myself, thank you.
Martin seized Doonspike's paw and pumped it heartily.
Greetings, Chief. You're looking very well. True, true. I'm getting younger by the day. Plump as a pear and brisk as a bumblebee. Well, now, come on up to the dwellin' and loosen off your belt. We've been watching out each day for a glimpse of your grand little boat. Sure, and the cooks are roasting the paws off themselves to make ye a grand old supper. I think we'll even be able to fill Gaunt's belly tonight. How you doodlin' there, mouse thief?
Gaunt fell into the dune hog's speech mode.
Sure, and if and I look half as grand as yourself, then I'm twice the mouse I used to be, sir.
Linking paws and chattering away happily, crew and dune hogs made their way into the sandhills and entered the cunningly disguised dwelling house. Bo and his friends were quite impressed by it all, and the hare expressed his admiration to all the young hedgehogs while shielding Trimp from them.
I say, what a super wheeze! A jolly great place like this inside a sand dune, what? Well done, you chaps! Top marks!
One of the young males was winking slyly at Trimp.
Sure, and I'd forgotten how pretty ye are. A hog had traveled 10 rough country leagues and not see the likes of ye. I'll wager you could charm the stars out of the skies with just a flutter of those eyelashes.
Bo pretended to think the dune hog was talking to him. He tweaked the creature's ear sharply.
Mind your manners, sir. We haven't even been introduced, what? Though you seem jolly perceptive for a hedgehog. Mind you, I do strike quite a handsome impression on most creatures.
The honeysuckle's crew found that the dune hog hospitality was not lacking. For supper, they dined on a fine leek and potato soup, followed by mushroom, radish, and seafood stew, with an enormous fruit trifle for dessert. After that, they sat about drinking cordials and seafoam ale while they were entertained by a spine-tussling exhibition, some lively dune hog reels and jigs, and various poems, recitations, and ballads. Trimp sat with a group of hog maids, and they all flirted outrageously with the young males, who danced and spine-tussled to vie for their attention. Martin sat with Dunespike and Fermo, watching them with amusement. Fermo gestured toward them with his tankard. "Don't you wish you were their age again, Chief?" Dunespike shook his great head until the spikes rattled.
"Away with you, indeed I do not. They're completely mad, all of them. I'd sooner have victuals and drink any day."
Martin gave Dunespike a friendly shove. "You old fogey, look at them. They're young and happy with not a care on earth. Good luck to them, I say. Eh, Fermo?" The Guasim chieftain nodded his agreement.
"They don't have our problems, mate. We've got to figure how to get a boat of the honeysuckle size up a waterfall and past a pine wood full of painted savages. Aye, and even when we get by that lot, we'll still be battling upstream against the current. 'Tis going to be difficult, to say the least."
Dunespike poured himself some cordial.
"Then why'd you not find another route?"
"Huh. Easy said, Chief. But is there another route?
Let me think. Ah, now, what about North Fork?"
Fermo stared over the rim of his tankard at Dunespike.
"North Fork? Does it run up this far?"
"Sure it does and all. 2 days of a good paw's log from here."
Fermo called across to Fulgrim.
"Ahoy, mate! Do you know the North Fork stream?"
The scarred otter left off contending for the remains of the trifle with Bo.
"Aye. I know North Fork Stream right enough, though I never traveled right up it. I was reared at the southern end of that stream, is where my holt is at."
Fermo thumped the rush mat they were seated on.
"Of course! It joins up to the stream we sailed here on, about 3 days down from my tribe's summer camp. Just one thing, though. How are we going to get the honeysuckle overland to the North Fork Stream?"
Dunespike shrugged his powerful shoulders.
"And how else but to carry it? Sure, me and the Dunehogs will lend a paw to do the job. A fine lot we'd be if and we couldn't help out. That's what friends are for."
Martin clasped paws with a good old hog chief.
"And you surely are a great friend to us, sir."
Dunespike's huge frame shook with merriment.
"Sure, and I wouldn't risk being anything else to a warrior who can wield a sword like you, Martin of Redwall."
By first light next morning, they were all down on the beach. Dunespike had slept on the idea and awakened with a brilliant solution. Martin and the crew stood on one side, watching as the hedgehog chieftain put his scheme into action. 2 sets of wheels on axles were trundled out from somewhere in the dunes. Dunespike called out orders.
"Here now, Murfo, you and the lads attend to them wheels. Martin, get that grand old crew of yours on the starboard side, and I'll take the port side with my crowd."
Paddles and stout poles were thrust between the skiff's flat bottom to emerge the other side. Every beast took firm hold of them. Dunespike roared out,
"Are you fit now? Lift!"
The honeysuckle rose clear of the sand as they lifted. Murfo and the young ones rolled the wheels in, forward, and aft.
"Ah, that's grand. Let her down now. Easy."
2 dune hogs with big staples and mallets fixed the axles in position beneath the boat. Denny whispered to Trimp,
"Hur, hur, ye boat what don't sail on he sees, I likes it. Yon dune spiker be a girtly intelligent og, brye."
There was some minor trouble getting the wheeled vessel through the dunes and off the soft sand. However, once they hauled her up through a low gap in the cliff top, the going was good. It was fairly flat scrubland, grass and hard-packed earth, and there was no call to use the pulling ropes. With her sail up, the honeysuckle caught the wind and rolled along unaided. Bo and the other 3 elders were aboard her, with Dunespike, Trimp, and Chugger. The rest trotted alongside, sometimes even having to tug on the tow ropes to slow the honeysuckle's progress. Gonf laughed.
"Just think, if and there was no woodlands twixt here and Redwall, we could have sailed home by land."
Later in the afternoon, The land began a mild uphill slope, and the breeze died completely. They split into two parties, one forward, pulling on the tow ropes, the rest at the stern, pushing. But the skiff still ran fairly smooth on its wheels, so it would have been no great effort were it not for Chugger. The little squirrel had attached a gull feather to a pole, and he dashed back and forth, tickling the pullers and pushers mercilessly and haranguing them.
"Come on! Come on! Run! Make her go plenty faster, or Cap'n Chug tickle you tails off!"
Tramp decided she had put up with enough. Looping a line about the tormentor, she relieved him of the pole and tied him to the mast. Chugger set up an immediate clamor.
"Hiya, Cap'n! Let me go! Help me, old grandpas! Mr. Din! Mr. Fool! Help Chug!"
But no help was forthcoming. Quite the opposite, in fact. Bo took hold of the feathered pole and began tickling his adopted grand squirrel.
"See how you like it, sir, what? Silence now, or I'll jolly well tickle the tip of your nose and make you sneeze all season. Now, what you say to that, Cap'n Chug?
Chop a you tail off, Bo, and Chug not make you any no more skilly duff."
Bo slumped down beside Berg, nodding sadly.
"No skilly and duff, eh, what? Ah, well, such is the fate of a blinkin' mutineer, old chap."
That night they set up camp in the lee of a wide stone outcrop at the base of a hill. Log-a-log Firmo sat looking at the honeysuckle speculatively.
"You know, Gonf, I think I'll leave those wheels on her. Won't do no harm to a flat-bottomed craft like the honeysuckle. Ah, wait till my missus sees our new boat. She'll be proud as a toad with a top hat."
Fulgrim had been to the top of the hill to see what the going would be like next day. On his return, the otter called Martin and Doonspike to one side.
"I think I just spotted trouble the other side of this hill."
The warrior mouse became instantly alert.
"What sort of trouble, Fulgrim?" "Bunch of ragtag vermin, foxes, stoats, and the like."
Martin was away uphill swiftly, sword in paw.
"Let's go and take a look."
Bellying down, the three friends crawled over the hilltop. Below them, on the gorse-strewn plain, several small fires were burning. There was little need to investigate further, for by the light of a half-moon they could estimate the numbers of foe beast below. Doonspike had seen the same band before.
"They were sniffing round in our dunes last winter, but we covered our tracks well and got the young'uns safe inside the old dwelling. Sure, myself and some others put on our sheets and stilts and scared the blackguards off. What do you think we should do about them, Martin?"
Without hesitation, the warrior answered, "We could defeat them in a fight, but there's no sense in that. I want every beast to reach their home safe. Listen now, I think I've got a solution to the problem." Skipper perched high up on the south gable, his footpaws firmly lodged in a roof beam gap. From where he stood, the otter chieftain could see out over the countless acres of mossflower wood to the east. He turned slowly, looking across the vast plain to the west.
"Wrap me, Rudder, what a sight! Now I know why birds are singing happily. Everything looks so different from up here."
He shut his eyes momentarily as he caught sight of Lady Amber walking along the topmost scaffold pole as if it were a broad roadway.
"Marm, I beg you, would you mind not doing that till I'm back on the ground? Something inside me just did a somersault."
The Squirrel Queen leaped lightly down beside him.
"Sorry, Skip. I forgot there was a land dweller up here. Is the weather vane ready yet?"
"Nearly. Old Ferdy and Cogs are doing as fine a job of smithying as I ever saw, Marm, though Miss Columbine says there won't be a scrap of charcoal left in the kitchens to cook with. They're using the open hearth fire to heat the iron and beating it out on the stone floor. I came up here 'cause I couldn't abide the noise. Ding, bang, ding, bang. Me poor old head's still ringing inside."
Lady Amber's manner was more practical than sympathetic.
"Don't tell me, Skip, you can't abide noise. Ha! 'Tis usually you who creates most of the noise round here with your big foghorn voice. As for heights, if you haven't got a head for them, I don't advise hanging round up here. You'll only make yourself ill. Why not pop down to the orchard and help the carpenters? That's far more peaceful.
Skipper tugged on the pulley rope of the hoist.
Good idea, Marm. The orchard it is.
The hoist was merely a system of counterweights. Skipper stepped aboard a small platform, and it descended slowly. On the way down, he was passed by the other platform, on which stood a squirrel with two blocks of sandstone going up. They waved to each other as the platforms passed.
Where are you bound, Skip?
Down to the orchard, matey, to lend a paw with the beams.
Tell Girdle to load mortar on that platform when you get down. I'll leave one of these blocks on as a counterweight.
A mole and four mice were waiting at the bottom, and they locked off the platform against a log protruding from the wall. The mole touched his snout in greeting.
Them needin' more blocks oop there, Skip?
The otter stepped from the platform.
Not at present, Girdle. 'Tis mortar they want.
Girdle and the mice began shoveling a mixture of sand, crushed limestone, and water onto the platform. It would enable the builders to cement the heavy sandstone blocks firmly into place. At the far corner of Redwall's orchard, the carpenters had set up shop. A pit had been dug so that they could cut planking with long, double-pawed saws, and there was a bench with vise, chisels, and mallets, as well as a fire with augers and pokers resting in it. These would be used to bore holes so the wood could be jointed with pegs. Seasoned trunks of elm, oak, beech, pine, and sycamore were stacked against the wall in piles. Skipper loved the fragrant smells of fresh wood and heaps of bark shavings. A fat, whiskery old bank bull with a charcoal stick behind one ear and a long canvas apron glanced up from a pine log he was working on and nodded at the otter chieftain.
Afternoon, Skip. You fancy helping me strip the bark off in this timber? It'll make good skirting boards for the upper dormitories. I like pine. Got a fragrance all of its own.
Skipper found a spoke shave and began working on the other side of the log. Long pine slivers ran curling from his sharp blade, and Skipper sniffed fondly.
You're right, Miglo. 'Tis a clean, fresh smell. I can feel it clearing me head up nicely.
A dormouse popped her head up from the saw pit.
Hello, Skip. How's it going on the south gable? I spotted you up there earlier.
Huh, you wouldn't get me anywhere that high, not for all the nuts in Mossflower, matey.
Skipper blew off a shaving that had stuck to his nose.
Aye, leave that to the squirrels and a gang of crazy mice and hedgehogs who likes that sort of thing. Well, I tell you, Marm, I was surprised how far they'd gotten along. Lady Amber says another couple of days should bring it to a peak. Then they can set up the weather vane.
Miglo chuckled gruffly through his bushy whiskers.
Amber's squirrels ain't setting up no weather vane. 'Tis Ferdy and Cogs who'll be doing that job. Ho, ho, ho! Wait'll you see those two bulky old cellar hogs wobbling about up there. They ain't looking forward to it, I can tell you.
Skipper smiled at the thought of Redwall's twin cellar hogs high on the south gable.
No, nor would I fancy it.
Carrying a big earthenware jug and beakers on a tray between them, Mayberry and Catkin, the otter maids, awkwardly bobbed curtsies to all the workers.
Miss Bella said to bring you a cool drink, mint leaf and rosehip cordial from the cellars. She said it had washed the sawdust down, sir.
Miglo swigged off a full beaker in one go.
Just the stuff. Colder than ice and very refreshing. Thank you.
Skipper sipped his drink slowly, relishing it. The otter maids topped up his beaker.
We didn't know you were a carpenter, Grandpa.
He winked at them.
Just shows you, me pretties. You don't know half the things your old grandpa can do.
Oh, yes, we do. We know lots of things you can do.
Do you now? Like what?
We know you can hide under water in the pond when 'tis your turn to wash pots and dishes. Yes, and we know you can wake every beast when you talk in your sleep with your big loud voice. And we know you can sup more hot root soup than any beast, and drink more October ale, and scoff more damson pudding.
The otter chieftain squinted fiercely at his two young granddaughters as he advanced on them.
Ha-har, me pretties! And did you know that I can clip the noses of little otter maids with me smoke shave?
They fled squealing and giggling from the orchard. That evening it went cool suddenly. Standing on the outer wall ramparts of the abbey, Bella and Columbine watched the enchanting sight of summer's last evening. Streaked to the west with slim, dark cloud tails, the sunset was awesome. In the final moments, the skies turned deep scarlet on the horizon, ranging up through crimson and rose to a delicate pink. Above this, it faded to a broad band of buttery amber, with soft, dark blue pierced by the faint twinkle of early stars. Columbine let her breath out in a long, wistful sigh.
"I hope my Gonf can see all of this beauty."
Bella placed a paw gently on her friend's shoulder.
"I'm sure he can. I know he'll be thinking of you and the little one here at Redwall awaiting his return."
A random thought caused the mousewife to cover her mouth, stifling a chuckle.
"Unless there's food to be had, of course. Gonf would sooner gaze at a fruit pudding than a sunset."
Bella joined in her laughter.
"Then I suggest we post a daily lookout on this wall from now on. No doubt we can accommodate his sense of beauty with a big apple pie."
37. A lively breeze stopped autumn's first day, starting with a gentle mist. The honeysuckle was positioned just below the brow of the hill, armed with slings and oars, and the crew and their dunehog allies stood waiting. Fermo tested the wind direction with a damp paw.
"Couldn't ask for a fairer breeze, Martin,"
the warrior signaled to Fulgrim.
"Off you go, mate, and don't forget to raise a shout at the right moment."
The smallest of the Gwasim shrews was bent double, wearing a cape which Trimp had made for Chugger. He grasped Fulgrim's paw and toddled off over the hilltop, with the scarred otter adopting his old, hunched hunting pose. Together they looked like a grandsire and his grandchild. A stringy-looking weasel was arguing with a ferret, disputing over a wooden skewer festooned with insect and moth carcasses which had been spiked there to roast over the fire. A motley collection of rats and assorted vermin watched them, knowing a fight was inevitable. As the weasel reached for the skewer, the ferret kicked him.
"Get your dirty paws off of me, vittles, long nose!"
The weasel was knocked forward, scorching his paw in the flames. He turned, snarling at his tormentor.
"Half of them are mine. Lift your paw to me again and I'll chop it off, greedy guts!"
Like a flash, a broad, evil-looking blade appeared in the ferret's paw. He aimed another kick at the weasel.
"You couldn't chop your way out of a daisy patch. Back off from those vittles. They're mine."
The weasel shrugged as if admitting defeat. Picking up the sharpened skewer, whose end was on fire, he turned to the ferret.
What's a pile of squashed bugs to me? You have 'em."
Bounding forward, he thrust the skewer hard into the ferret's gut. A shriek of agony rang out, and the ferret fell backward, dying, stabbed through his stomach. Callous laughter and coarse remarks greeted the cruel act.
"Ha, ha, ha! Something upset his stomach!
Hee, hee, hee! Old Brango looks just like a bug on that skewer! Look at him wriggle!"
A fox who had lost interest in the gruesome spectacle happened to turn and look uphill. He caught sight of the two pitiful figures hobbling side by side.
"Oh, lucky day. Look what's coming this way, mates."
Paws grasped blades as most of the vermin began inching toward the two unfortunate creatures, calling mockingly,
"Come and join us for dinner, friends. Aye, don't be scared. You'll have naught to be worried about soon. Ain't that right, mates?"
The two creatures halted, as if noticing the evil crew for the first time. Slowly they backed off uphill, crying piteously,
"Please don't hurt us. We're only poor travelers."
Speeding up their advance, the vermin began to spread in an arc, trying to cut their quarry off. The poor travelers ran then, scampering uphill and yelling aloud,
"Help! Oh, help us, some beast! Help!"
Pulling a rusty axe from his belt, the fox ran after them.
"I saw him first."
The skinny weasel dashed past him, snarling,
"First there, first served, Brushtail."
As Fulgrim and the Gwasim shrew reached the ridge crest, They were yanked aboard the Honeysuckle. Down the hill she thundered, the breeze billowing her sail full out. War cries rang around the hillside.
Eulalia! Red Wall! Gora Mahogora!
The vermin were taken completely by surprise. Denny whacked out with an orb, laying the skinny weasel out cold. Hard, round slingstones cracked against skulls, ribs, paws, and tails, filling the air like angry hornets in swarm. Heedless of the stupidity of their retreat, the vermin fled off downhill with the Honeysuckle skimming behind them. Berg caught the fox by his tail and dragged him along, while Bo hung over the side belaboring him with an oar.
You thoroughly whack! Despicable! Thwack! Whack! Cad!
A rat who was tripped by one of the forward oars leaped smartly up, only to be felled by Fermo, who from his position at the stern walloped him over the head. Onward plunged the vermin in their rout, hotly pursued by a skiff on wheels, leaving in its wake a trail of wounded and senseless creatures. Finally, the remnants of the ragtag vermin band broke, running off in separate directions, but not before Doonspike lassoed one. The terrified ferret was dragged aboard. He lay quivering on the deck of the still-traveling craft, staring up into the fearsome, scarred face of Fulgrim. Resting his axe blade between the ferret's eyes, the otter growled in a menacing voice.
I see I've got your attention, scumbrain, so listen hard. We'll be sailing these regions for the next couple of seasons, hunting down vermin and cleaning up the land. You're a lot of the first, ain't you the lucky ones? We're letting you live, so you and your cronies can spread the word round that we've arrived. You see that warrior with a nice sharp sword? He's our leader. Name a Martin of Redwall, a very fair beast. He believes in giving vermin a sportin' chance, then slaying 'em.
Martin prodded the ferret with his blade tip. Up on your paws, bully. Come on! Trembling uncontrollably, the ferret rose. The Honeysuckle had slowed down minimally, breasting another rise. Then she picked up speed, skimming downhill. Martin swung his sword up high. Jump or die!
Yeah!
With a pitiful wail, the ferret flung himself overboard. They watched him bounce and spin as he rolled downhill, until a rock halted his progress with a juicy thud. The breeze made a hissing sound as it ran through Doonspike's stickles, and he clapped his paws happily.
And isn't this the grand old way to be traveling? Sure I've not had this much fun since I caught a jellyfish on me spikes. Cap'n Chug, sir, do we throw out the anchor at lunchtime, or does eating on the move sound like a grand old idea to you?
Chugger gave Doonspike his captain's scowl.
What a jellyfish is!
The hedgehog chieftain caught him and tickled Chugger until he broke down laughing.
You're a jellyfish, you little omadorm, a fat wee jellyfish.
Chugger rolled about, unable to escape.
Hee hee hee, help me, Mr. Fole. Hee hee hee, I nor a jellyfish, I only a little chug. Hee hee, help, help!
The Honeysuckle did not stop for lunch. They kept on while the breezes favored progress. During the afternoon, the wind deserted the sails, and the skiff rolled to an easy halt at the fringe of a copse. Gwasim Cooks discovered a small spring among the trees where the water was cool and sweet. Apples, pears, and wild berries were plentiful. Lounging in the tree shade, the crew ate and drank their fill. Doonspike looked about admiringly.
Murpho, me son, does this place not look grand to you?
Aye, grand, da, grand tis.
And a whole lot better in living midst old sand dunes?
Aye, t'would be, da, t'would be so.
Sure, we've got fruit to pick from the bough and berries to gather as we please. What would you say to living here?
Oh, grand to be sure, da, we'd want for nothing.
Doonspike cuffed his son's ear fondly.
Well spoken. Take 10 of the lads and start digging a good old cave beneath these trees. I'll send the rest back to the dunes for the babies and the elders.
Would that be all right with you, Martin of Redwall?" Martin was looking up at the sky and replied absently, "Yes, of course it will, Chief, providing you show us where North Fork Stream lies." "Sure, of course I will. What are you staring up at the sky for?" "Don't worry, it won't fall. It's been up there a long time."
Martin spoke to Doonspike, though he was looking at Gonf. "Birds are starting to fly south. The autumn has come." The mouse thief watched until the birds were out of sight.
"We must remember our word, mate. Time for us to fly home."
Following breakfast in the great hall of Redwall Abbey, all the creatures sat awaiting the allotment of daily chores. Bella, whose duty it was to apportion the work, was deep in conversation with Abbess Germain. Eager eyes watched the Badger Mother as Redwallers speculated on which way the roster would go for them.
"Hope I'm helping Ferdy and Cogs in the cellars again."
"Cellars are closed today. They've got to raise the weather vane on South Gable."
"I'm not going up there."
"You wouldn't be allowed out there, sir. Only ye squirrels be on South Gable to help with ye vane."
"Hope I don't get picked as cook's helper again. Huh, they had me scrubbing pots all day last time."
All talk ceased instantly when Bella rapped the table.
"Lady Amber and her squirrels will be assisting Ferdy and Cogs to raise the weather vane on the top of South Gable."
"There, see, just like I told thee."
Bella paused, looking in the direction of the interruption. There was a muffled giggle, followed by respectful silence. She waited a moment before continuing.
"All other building work today will be suspended. Miglow, Mayberry, and Catkin, you are today's duty cooks."
The whiskery old bank bowl winked at both otter maids, who wriggled and tittered excitedly before realizing the importance of their position and sitting up primly. Bella nodded to the three Redwallers.
"Forget any cooking or baking for today. There's enough bread, scones, and pastry been readied overnight. Concentrate on a cold buffet, salads, fruit cups, and such. Skipper will take watch on the battlements for signs of our returning travelers. Without exception, every other beast within our walls is to go to the storerooms for sacks and baskets. Columbine, will you and Girdle see that ladders and sticks are available, please?"
Some of the elders began smiling and nudging one another, but the younger element looked puzzled. Abbess Germain allowed Bella to help her up onto the table. Then she waved her paws in the air and called out in a reedy quaver,
"Then 'tis all to the orchard for fruit harvest."
Gleeful cheers greeted this announcement, followed by chaos. Redwallers dashed to the storerooms, where Columbine was issuing sacks and baskets as fast as she could.
"Form a line there. Don't push. There's plenty for all. Gonfalet, take that sack off your head. Girdle, will you see that all dibbins are given berry trugs? Thank you."
Passing out the small baskets to the little ones, the mole chuckled at their antics.
"Them be baskets, not sandals. Take 'em off any footpaws."
Columbine was settling Abbess Germain down in a wheelbarrow full of soft moss beneath the shade of a spreading horse chestnut tree. Both of them broke down laughing at the sight of Bella leading the band of pickers in a harvest dance, singing as she went. Clutching Columbine's paw, the ancient abbess chuckled,
"Oh, deary me, and preserve my paws. It's like seeing a great boulder roll down a mountainside, watching our Bella dance, hee hee hee."
Columbine skipped aside as Bella hurtled by.
"Ha ha ha ha, maybe so, but there's those not even half Bella's age who can't keep up with her."
Winding its way through trees and around bushes, the merry dance went on, with every beast singing their hearts out.
"Now go, good son and daughter, haste to our orchard fair, and gather in the harvest which lies awaiting there. Ripe apples are falling to the ground, as pears so sweet and juicy are lying all around. Keep singing, pretty daughter, until the work is done, so you don't eat the berries and leave your mother none. Blackberries, ripe cherries, don't bruise or break them, miss,
for sweetness can be lost, like a faithless lover's kiss. The gooseberry and greengage are bittersweet, my son, and Damson has a heartstone, you'll find before you're done. Enchanting, enticing, like wild grape on the vine, the maidens want to help you to let their paws entwine. So pick a berry, sing so merry, harvest time is here. Go skipping round our orchard, my son and daughter dear.
Bella stood tall. Reaching a high branch, she pulled it down to her face and sniffed deep.
Ah, not so sweet as the smell of a good russet apple on the bough. I could sniff 'em all day.
Beneath her, a hogwife stood tapping her footpaw, sack held wide open and waiting.
Beg pardon, Miss Bell, but could you leave off sniffing and start shaking afore it goes dark?
Oops, silly old me. Sorry.
The badger gave the bough a mighty shake, releasing ripe russets in a shower. When she looked down, the hogwife was still tapping her footpaws, two apples impaled on her head spikes, another two on her back.
Titch, titch. Miss Bell, marm, 'twould be a help if'n you shook 'em into the sack.
Columbine and Germaine were picking red currants, the abbess keeping a curious eye on Gonflet.
My dear, what is that little son of yours up to? He's supposed to be gathering raspberries, isn't he?
Columbine could not help smiling as she watched the little mouse. He would fill both his smock pants with fruit, take a furtive glance left and right, then scurry off to empty his load into a trug hidden beneath the berry hedge.
Just like his father, a real mouse thief.
He's not happy unless he thinks he's stealing something, Mother Abbess. I'll have to turn him upside down and shake him before he goes to bed tonight. Otherwise, there'll be raspberries squashed around the dormitory for the rest of the season. Little pickle. He's a good worker, though. The harvesting was going well, moles trundling off to the storerooms with laden trolleys as the fruit was picked and basketed or bagged up. At midday, the cooks borrowed three trolleys to bring lunch for the pickers. Mayberry and Catkin repulsed any advances on the food with frosty glances and severe words.
Not a single bite until you've washed at the pond. Gracious me, look at those sticky paws. Away with you.
Miglow gave them a whiskery grin.
That's the stuff, missies. You tell 'em. Go on, you're the cooks. 'Tis up to you.
Emboldened, the otter maid spared no beast from censure.
Miss Bella, have you been picking apples with your nose? You can just go and wash your face this instant. Shame on you, Mother Abbess. 'Tis up to you to set an example. Look at yourself. Red currant juice from tail to ears. Girdle, help her to get washed, please.
Columbine's giggles were cut short as they turned their attentions upon her.
'Tis no laughing matter, Miss Columbine. Shame on you. Aye, woe upon you if and Mr. Gaunt was to see you now. We'll inspect those paws after you've washed 'em.
It was a simple and satisfying lunch which had been prepared for the harvesters. Sliced apples, cheese, and fresh, crusty bread, with new cider or cold mint tea to sip, and strawberries with meadow cream for dessert. Columbine sat beneath the chestnut tree with her friends, still shaking her head and smiling over the bossy cooks.
Honestly, I felt just like a naughty dibbin the way those two young snips ordered me off to the pond.
The abbess sandwiched a wedge of cheese with bread.
Me too, bless their hearts. They meant well, though.
Bella snorted.
Meant well, the little tyrants. They sent me back to the pond twice to wash my snout properly.
Miglow had been eavesdropping, and he called across to them,
Aye, but they're a credit to old Skipper, that they are.
Suddenly, every beast started with fright as a loud cry rent the air.
Red wall!
Bella was on her paws in a flash, pointing upward.
Look! They've raised the weather vane on South Gable.
Every beast in the orchard raised their paws and returned the shout to the tiny figures high up on the abbey building.
Red wall!
Cheering broke out as the Squirrel Queen, Lady Amber, stood out, balancing on the cross pieces of the iron vane, swaying as a light breeze turned its metal arrow topspike. Ferdy and Cogs clung to the north and south struts, waving jubilantly to their friends below. As Columbine gazed up at the completed south wall, she hugged the abbess.
"Oh, they've done it, Mother Abbess. Isn't it beautiful?"
Germaine looked for as long as she could, then shut her eyes tight to stem the tears.
"At last, my Red Wall Abbey. I never thought I'd live to see the dream become reality."
Bella picked the abbess up as though she weighed nothing, sitting the ancient mouse upon her shoulder to allow her a better view. While Germaine was up there, Bella took advantage of her robe hem to wipe her own eyes.
"Three cheers for Redwall Abbey! May it stand as long as seasons change and the sun rises, my friends!"
Never were three cheers raised so joyously. Hurrah! 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 38. On a rare, boisterous autumn morn, two otters stood waist-deep in the waters where North Fork Stream merged with the main flow seaward. It was here, in the swirl of currents, that the finest water shrimp were to be found. Unstaking a long, tubular reed net, they hauled it carefully to the bank. The elder of the pair, a sleek, tough otter wife, instructed her half-grown son in the rudiments of his tribe's fishing tradition. "Always haul the net in slow and easy, Jitty. I seen silly beasts lose all their catch many a time from rushing things. There now, look at our net, son, bulging with the little beauties. Tie the end off good and tight, that's it." Grinning from ear to ear, Jitty patted the well-packed net.
"Ha-har! Wait till Chief Tungro claps eyes on this lot. I bet by next season he'll let me come here alone."
The young otter had no time for further conversation. His mother knocked him flat into the cover of hanging willow fronds. Stifling his mouth with a swift paw, she lay beside him, peering upstream at the strange craft in the distance.
"Strike me, Rudder, will you look at that thing? I ain't never seen nothing like it in these waters. Wait, I'd know that beast standing in the bows if and he was the last otter on earth. Come on, Jed. Let's get the bad news back to Tungro."
They hurried off southward along the bank, toting the loaded net between them, with Jitty, like most youngsters, besieging his mother with questions.
"It was an otter on that boat. I saw him, too. But why is it bad news for Tungro? Does he know the otter?"
"Ha! Know him? I'll say he does. That's Fulgrim, his mad brother. I thought we'd seen the last of that un."
"Mad? Why is he mad? What did he do?"
"Well, he used to go hunting vermin, and when he caught up with them, he'd... Never you mind what he did. Now keep up and don't drop that net or 'twill burst."
The day was rather overcast, though the sun showed at intervals between masses of gray-white cloud, which the playful wind chased to the southeast. The honeysuckle rode at half-sail, Fermo steering her into the bank, which was crowded with otters. Trent stood alongside Fulgrim, watching him closely.
"My goodness, Ful, they've all turned out to welcome you home. See, there's your brother Tungro."
Chugger launched himself from the mast onto his friend Fulgrim's shoulders.
"Cha! Otters not welcome you, Mr. Ful. No beast laugh or shout hello to you. Big long faces on 'em."
Fulgrim settled the little squirrel on his strong shoulders.
"They got good cause not to be cheery, mate. My tribe fears me. I was naught but a load of trouble to 'em."
Chugger growled.
"Grr! You're not trouble, Mr. Ful. You're my matey. I chop their tails off for you."
Fulgrim slid over the side, still carrying Chugger.
"You sit up there and behave yourself now. Leave this to me."
Otters parted ranks, fearing to be near the returning warrior. But Tungro waded swiftly forward. Clasping Fulgrim's paws tightly, he smiled into the heavily scarred face with great fondness.
"My brother, welcome back to the Holt. Come on, matey, bring your little friend. Bring all your friends. Rest and eat."
The Holt was an enlarged bank cave, old and very comfortable, filled with beautifully carved furniture, the specialty of Tungro's tribe, who were master craftsbeasts and proud of their carpentry skills. Most of the tribe were still wary of Fulgrim, so he kept to the company of the Honeysuckle's crew. They sat on elaborately carved benches by the fire, dining on fresh hot root and water shrimp soup, oat farls, and a riverbank salad. Martin and Gonf sat at a highly polished table with Tungro, who poured steaming blackberry and sage cordial for them while the cooks served their food.
"You and your friends have worked wonders with my brother. He is not the same savage beast, thanks to you, Martin."
The warrior sipped his cordial gratefully.
"Don't give me the credit, friend. It was young Trimp and little Chugger who wrought the change in Fulgrim."
Turning to Gonf, the otter inquired,
"Why do you keep staring at me, mouse thief?"
The irrepressible Gonf shrugged.
"The more I look at you, the stronger you remind me of some beast. Martin, would you say Tungro resembles Skipper?"
"Aye, mate. Now you come to mention it, he does, very much."
Tungro sat up at the mention of the name.
"Skipper? Is he an otter about old enough to be my father?"
Gonf slapped the table.
"I knew it! You're related to him!"
A faraway look entered Tungro's eyes as he unfolded the tale.
"My grandmother gave birth to 3 sons on the same day, Bargood, my father, and his 2 brothers, Riverwhite and Warthorn. Riverwhite was much like my brother Fulgrim, a great fighter and slayer of vermin. Every beast thought him sick in the head because of his love for battle. He left our Holt to go roving, and they say his tail was severed by foe beasts. An otter without a rudder, as you know, is like a fish without water. Riverwhite became a woodland dweller, a master of disguises, and he called himself Mask because of this. Travelers told my father that he had been slain, though where, when, and how it all happened, we never got to know. The other brother, Warthorn, was the biggest and strongest of all 3. He left the Holt when he was scarce half-grown, because he couldn't ever buckle down to my grandfather's strict rule. Warthorn was such a natural leader that no beast used his given name. They nicknamed him Skipper, which is a title we give to otter chieftains. Anyhow, he went off to found his own tribe and hasn't been heard of since. When Bargood, my father, was alive, he'd look at me and say that I was the image of his lost brother Skipper. Then he'd turn to Fulgrim and say that he was the double of Riverwhite, his other brother."
Martin leaned across the table and held Tungro's paw.
"Would you like to meet your uncle, Warthorn?"
Tungro nodded wistfully.
"I'd love to. I've heard so many tales about him. But he'd left this Holt long before I was born. Do you think I ever could meet Warthorn?"
"Certainly, my friend. Journey to Redwall with us, and you will." A few days later, Logalog Fermo's large, fierce wife, Honeysuckle, was coping with her brood on the stream bank of their summer camp. Energetically, she scrubbed at the wriggling body of her eldest.
"Be still, you little worm! I'll teach you to roll about in that midden of a water margin, filthy shrew!"
Flicking out with a wet rag, she caught another young one, a stinging slap across the tail.
"Get your paws away from those scones, or I'll chop your tail off and bake ye in a pie. Go on, be off with ye."
4 tiny shrew maids came dashing along the bank, squeaking,
"Mama, Mama, Daddy's coming in a big boat with a sail."
Honeysuckle grabbed the nearest one.
"Just look at the bank mud on that smock, and it was clean on this very morn. Go and get a fresh one off'n your grandma, not one of those off the rock ledge. They ain't dry yet. So, the great roving Logalog's decided to come home again, has he?"
Fermo's deep, rich voice hailed her from upriver.
"Honeysuckle, me precious, I'm back, oh, dew of me life."
She scowled at Fermo, standing heroically in the prow of the skiff as it sailed inshore. Twirling the corner of a face cloth, she wiggled it down the ear of the little shrew she was attempting to clean up.
"Back at the end of summer, my darling. I'll return on the first autumn mist,
O jewel of the woodlands.
What time do you call this to be getting back, you great useless lump of gawesome fur, eh?
Gomp sprinted ashore with two shrews in his wake, carrying a carved otter footstool and several strings of dunehog quills and beads in various gaudy colors. He pointed to the nameplate on the skiff's bow, planting a genteel kiss on the shrew wife's sud-covered paw.
Oh, beauteous beast, your spouse brings ye gifts from afar, and all borne on a fine vessel that carries your own fair name. He has done naught but pine for you night and day.
Honeysuckle melted immediately in the face of Gomp's gallantry. Fluttering her eyelids, she gave him a playful shove, which sent him sprawling in the shallows.
Oh, Mr. Gomp, you old flatterer, fancy calling that lovely ship after me. Whatever gave you the idea?
The Prince of Mouse Thieves stood up, shaking water from his rear end, still spouting eloquently.
'Twas all your good Firmo's idea, my lady. We wanted to call the boat Gullywhacker, but he wouldn't hear of it. No, no, says he, we must call it Honeysuckle, after my beloved.
Firmo gasped as Honeysuckle grabbed him from the prow and squeezed the air from his lungs in a mighty embrace.
Ow, ow, I wronged you, me dear one. Forgive me. All these wonderful things you brought back for your wife. Ow, ow, I could cut out me tongue for what I said about you.
Firmo managed to gasp out in a stifled mutter.
Cut your tongue out? No such luck. More's the pity.
She dropped him in the shallows.
What was that you said?
Firmo scrambled up, thinking quickly.
I said, cut your tongue out? No, no, my duck. You're far too pretty.
Berg and his friends were greatly taken with the shrew babes, but none more so than Bo. The gluttonous hare allowed the tiny creatures to feed him vast amounts of food at the noontide meal.
Can ye eat more plum pudding, sir?
Just try me, laddie. Shove it this way, what?
My mama make this salad, sir. Do you like it?
Rather. What a clever lady your mama is. Fill my bowl up again. There's a good little tyke.
Do you like apple and pear turnover, sir?
Like it? Steer it in my direction, ye young tail wagger, and I'll show you whether I like it.
End of side 8. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.